Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast, the podcast that will help you embrace, grow, and be transformed by the transitions of life. Now here's your host, Debbie Ronka.
Hi, everyone. This is Debbie, and welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast. This is the podcast where we come together each week to learn more about the purpose and the power of life's transitions. And one of those significant transitions could be when you are in the season of being a leader. And a leader's growth and development is really critical. And so if you are investing in yourself, your mindset, your emotional tools, your ability to communicate, well, you literally are investing also in your team, because as you grow, you have more to impart. And as you expand in your growth, you also will have more impact. People will know if a leader is grounded. People can also sense when a leader is growing, and they can absolutely feel when a leader is stuck. And so if you are longing to take your leadership to a higher level, well, this episode is for you. And it's for that very reason that I have invited across the pond from the UK, Paul Crick, to be my guest today. Paul is the creator of Grace Framework and the founder of Grace Works. And after two decades of global consulting with PwC, Capgemini, and IBM, Paul now works with leaders and their teams and helping them to go beyond performance to develop grace. He blends leadership psychology, martial arts, and creative practices to help high achievers go from pressure to presence while developing their resilience, their clarity, their impact, all without burnout. So, Paul, I am so excited to have you here, and welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast.
Thank you, Debbie. That's very kind of you. What a very generous introduction.
Well, you are so welcome. And I'm really excited to hear you've done so much globally. You have so much expertise. What was the moment or what happened when you felt the need to create this Grace Framework?
Oh, it's a long story, really, which I'll try and keep short. So my background is as a management consultant. In fact, I like to say I'm a recovering management consultant. And I spent 20 years doing some great work. But there was a particular day in London when I was sat on the end of a hotel bed at the end of a very long day, 4 years in, I think, and the grind of consulting was starting to take hold. And I was tired. The client had been particularly fractious that week. And I'd arrived in the hotel room, sat on the end of the bed, looked at the wall and the wallpaper and said, "Is this it? Because if it is, I don't like it. You know, something's not right." Yes. In theory, I should be really happy. You know, everyone looking at me would look at the markers of success, the tangible stuff to say you work for this company, you've got a very nice salary, you've got a very nice lifestyle. Sort yourself out. What's wrong with you?
Right.
If I could have answered that, then I would have done. But I really was at a loss and couldn't understand why all this had come to me. I'd worked really hard to get to where I got to, and it just didn't feel right. And to be honest, the road ahead didn't look very appetizing or clear. So I was curious as to, I was uncomfortable. I didn't really know what to do. So that was the start. 2007, that was, of a very long journey that brings me to here now, running my own company and the Grace Framework. But I think grace comes from, I don't know, when you set up as a coach, you're sort of encouraged to come up with your own methodology and framework. So I was searching for something like that. And really, that's out of everything I've done, there comes a sort of coming together of a number of different lines of thinking and joining of dots that gets you to a place and you go, right, okay, I can make something of that makes sense.
Absolutely. And you know, before we go forward, I really have to take a moment to say what you just shared, Paul, is classic transition. And this is for the audience and anyone who's listening. We all get to that place in life where whatever we're currently doing doesn't seem to serve us, doesn't feel right anymore. And this is actually transition, trying to get your attention that there needs to be a change. There's a shift. You feel something going on inside. And that's what you were experiencing. And you answered that call. You answered that angst that you were feeling that there has to be more. What is it? And so for anyone who's listening, that's what it feels like when your no transition is calling you forth to do something new, to do something creative. So you said it so well, Paul. I just had to stop and highlight that moment. And so, okay, so I love this grace framework. So tell us, you incorporate so many different things, the leadership psychology, the martial arts, which I find fascinating, and the creative practices. So let's break that down.
Sure. So, I mean, the psychology thing. So the first thing I did when I had this experience at the hotel was the evening newspaper, the London Evening Standard. I picked it up to see what was on TV because I just wanted to numb out and sort of not think about work or the future. But as I flipped through it for the TV listings, there was a small advertisement in the bottom left hand corner of one of the pages, and it said free seminar, get the life you deserve. And I went, oh, that sounds good. I liked the word free. It was in London. It was 2 hours. It was another hotel. So I thought, oh, I'll book into that and I'll go and see what that is. And I learned two very valuable lessons when I went to that seminar. First thing I learned was there's no such thing as a free seminar. And second of all, I learned that I started to learn about neuro-linguistic programming, which was really my route into practical psychology. And I was hooked. Something really resonated for me about how you think about things. I recognized as things were being spoken about, there was things I was doing, ways I was being, and I felt uncomfortable in myself in that I didn't want to be those things anymore. I wanted to be something different, but quite what I really didn't know. And I think this is the thing with transition is sometimes we don't know when we've worked really hard. I always think of Stephen Covey when he wrote, you know, we spend so much time working really, really hard, and we go to school and we get good grades and then we get a degree and then we run out of the jungle with a ladder and we find the nearest jungle and tree and we put our ladder against the tree and we climb up. You spend years climbing up the ladder and we get to the top of the jungle and we can look out and we can see and we go, oh no, wrong jungle.
Oh no, it's so
and,
true.
And I think that was me. And it's been an interesting process of learning. So I did neuro-linguistic programming. I went to a longer event that I later learned was essentially a mini Tony Robbins event. Did my first firewalk. When I did that, the firewalk is just a metaphor for you can do anything in life you set your mind to.
Yes.
So I did that for the first time. And when I came off the end of the fire carpet, I was elated that I'd done it, but then I turned around and I just watched other people and watched the elation on their face as they did that. And something went off inside me and I went, ooh, whatever that is, I want to experience more of it. And so I wanted to help, having gone through that little process myself, I wanted to help other people do that. So I learned to be a neuro-linguistic programming trainer and started to set up my business just as everybody else was getting out of that business. So there was a valuable lesson in that. Alongside that, there were rumblings in the community and from the outside world that said, oh, this neuro-linguistic programming thing, you know, it's pseudoscience and it's problematic and, you know, it's got ethical issues and there isn't a body of research. And whilst that's changed, that attitude still existed. And I had clients that would come to me and say, I have this presenting issue. I want to be able to deal with it, make it easier. And the stuff I was using as tools and techniques wasn't working. So that bothered me. So when I went back into the community, some people said, well, it's not you, it's your clients. And I went, I don't like the sound of that. I don't believe that at all.
I agree.
And so I started looking for that answer, which was, okay, so what else is out there? What am I missing? And I went and studied energy psychology. So I did EFT, I did EMA trance, which again are very powerful modalities in their own right. And that brought the body into the equation. So not everything, we have an interesting understanding of what the mind is versus the brain. And Descartes has a lot to answer for. You know, I think therefore I am. No, the body is part of the brain. If you dig into the research, yes, we have an enskulled organ called a brain. But we have a nervous system that runs through our entire body, and therefore our body is part of that system.
Right.
And then I moved from there into thinking, well, actually, what I want to do is I want to do more transformative work because I was starting my own transformation. So at the time I was in the hotel, I weighed 266 pounds. I smoked 40 cigarettes a day, and I drank more or less a bottle of wine a day, which wasn't the best healthy
right.
thing. So I didn't do any exercise. So I was really big. I was slow, and I was unhealthy. But I didn't recognize it. I thought I was okay. Anyway, I did all these things. I got into psychotherapy. The course I did compared and contrasted seven of the major modalities, which was, given there's 360 different types of psychotherapy out there, you know, doing the main seven was great because I could see that this word in this psychology, in this psychotherapy was this in this psychotherapy. And I was able to join dots and understand the limits of each one, and also the tools within each one, which then by this time I was building this enormous toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
That just had a bunch of tools that, like any good person that works with tools, you know, they may not know which tool works for the particular situation, but they have the tool to try it out. So that was important. At the same time, I was clearing up some of the financial mess that I'd made. You know, I got significantly into a lot of personal debt. I was very lucky in that IBM hired me, which meant I could take the next 9 years and 9 months paying all that off, and rather than going bankrupt. And during that time, I became a coach. I qualified as a coach, and I co-led the community of coaching, which ended up being about 4,500 coaches globally. And I led it with eight other people who were involved in training and doing all kinds of things to make that community work. From there, I was getting close to the end of my time at IBM. I sort of came out of there. And by that time, I'd got some additional certifications as a coach, you know, and I'd moved into leadership. I'd taught leadership topics, particularly what a lot of people would recognize as soft skills, what I call power skills, to consultants. And I wasn't happy with some of the ways that things were being taught. We would teach knowledge, but we wouldn't teach practice. So you had a knowing doing gap, and we still have a very big knowing doing gap. And so your listeners know, you know, we spent globally around $65 billion a year on teaching leaders how to lead. And you have to sit back and say, well, if we spend that amount of money, why are we in the state we're in?
True.
Why are we in the mess? So something isn't working. So something about how we teach. I've also taught at four different universities from time to time. And I look at how that teaching works, and you go, yeah, you're teaching knowledge, but you're not teaching practice. And therefore you need to teach practice. And then 7 years ago, I started martial arts. And I do a martial art called Aikido, which is non-competitive. It's a non-striking art, and it's all about the art of harmony and peace, how to redirect energy that's comes towards you. And I love that as an approach for showing people how to deal with different types of energy. So if you put all this together, you end up with a very, very unique toolkit of tools, techniques, work experience, client experience, that puts me in a place where, you know, if clients want to work with me, then I've got plenty of stories to tell them. And I also walk my own talk in terms of I still train as a martial artist. And I'm an assistant instructor at the dojo. I still do. I work with a lot of different clients on different situations.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long answer to your question, but that's kind of where it all comes from.
Well, yes. Well, we always have to have a foundation. We have to have a beginning. And I appreciate you sharing, you know, what you went through to even develop yourself as a coach and a leader, and not just have the knowledge, but the fact that how, the practice part is so critical. Because if we don't practice what we know, there is no growth, really. Maybe that's more mental growth, but it's not internal growth as you are practicing. So I do have a couple questions here, and I was thinking about the Aikido. So I have here, Aikido centers around blending with energy rather than resisting it. How does that principle translate into modern organized leadership?
So you'll often get a situation where two people disagree with each other. And for the sake of argument, let's use a really silly example. Let's use you and me. You work for one department, I work for another department, and I tell you an idea. And Debbie, you say to me, "Paul, your idea's stupid." And I go, "Really?" And then we start to butt up against each other. And if we keep butting up against each other, nothing changes, you know, because what you resist persists.
Yes.
And therefore we push and push and push. But if I let the energy come through, so if you're telling me my idea is stupid, my ego could get in the way and go, "No, I'm stupid. I've been in this job for years. Don't you know who I am? Can't you see my job title? I've got this many degrees and this many honors and this many awards. You know, how dare you?" Or I could say, "Okay, tell me a little bit more about that. Tell me what is stupid about my idea." And all of a sudden, I've let the energy through.
Ah, I like that idea. And then communication can happen.
Yeah, but we can do that with our bodies. Often, very often, with my clients, I'll get them to stand opposite me and with a hand pushed against my hand and to push hard. And then all I do is I take a 180 degree turn and I just let them through in a way that doesn't cause them to fall over. Although on a mat, if we're doing martial arts, the idea is that they do fall over, but I support them in the middle of the back and I'm talking to them. And so they get a visceral experience of what that shift in energy feels like.
I really like the example that you use, because those words are so negative. Were I to speak them to you, you could see where a wall of defense would go up, and then you really get nowhere. It's just pushing back, but you allowed, I love your example, you allow the communication, and then it's the responsibility of the other person to communicate more why they feel the way they do at your
You're
particular.
Making room for possibility, you're making room for opportunity,
you're
and
opening
all because
the
you've
door.
Chosen. All because you've chosen to accept the energy that's brought to you. So when you look at the grace framework, the A of grace is all about acceptance. And that comes directly from the martial arts. It's like, what are you willing to accept? It doesn't mean you have to be steamrolled. It doesn't mean that I go, "Oh yeah, my idea is stupid." It's kind of like, I just open to the possibility that there might be something I learn by letting that energy in.
Absolutely. Now tell me about your creative practices. You know, is this about movement, drawing? Like how do you use creative
music,
practice?
Music.
Music. Okay.
You can't see it here, but there's three guitars there. There's a keyboard. I have a desk with a 88 key keyboard underneath, and I've got two keyboards right beside me that you can't see right now. So I've played music. I learned music when I was three. That's when I started. And I went really fast. In the UK, we have grade system. I'm not sure they have the same thing in the US, but basically it's 8 grades and then you take a diploma and then you go to college and study music. So I got to grade 7. And the reason I got there really, really quick. But the reason I stopped was, I'll be honest, I discovered rock and roll and girls. And 2 hours practice a day was not as appealing as slinging a guitar over you, you know, playing Beethoven. But I'm so glad I did all that, because I can still play now. And I'm learning. I've always wanted to do something to a professional standard. I'm in my early 60s now, so I'm thinking about what I want to do. So I'm learning how to write music properly, you know, to know what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, rather than just jamming something out and going, "Oh, that sounds good."
Well, how does that help leaders, especially someone who's analytical, who may not be able to embrace that kind of creative practice with music? How do you encourage them that this will help them?
Well, I think "I'm not creative" is a story that we tell ourselves. And it's usually because someone somewhere has said, "You're not creative." And we've got, and that's shamed us in some way or caused an adverse reaction for us to do that. And then that gets reinforced as we walk down a particular path. So I don't believe that, because if I give someone a tambourine or I give someone a drum, you know, you don't need to be able to sing, you don't need to be able to blow an instrument. Everyone can hit something, and I can show you how to do that to be successful. But the real point of creativity is most creativity is incremental and builds on what has gone before. It takes real courage. And I think we're in a time in our history now where real courage is required to say the thinking that got us to here is not the thinking that we need now to get us out of where we are. We need something new. That means we need to face a blank piece of paper and go, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Do you know? And then for everybody else to go, no, I don't know either. And then to have the courage and say, okay, well, let's try something. And we know when we first try it, it's going to be horrible.
Yes. Yeah.
Because and once we get that past, it's funny. I wrote a piece of music before I'm about to launch a new podcast, and I thought, right, I'm going to write my own music for this podcast, which I have done before. And I started writing it last night, and I was going, yeah, I'll write it in this complex time signature. And I got that working, and I got a rhythm built out of forest trees and twigs and all kinds of things making sounds. And I thought, God, this is great. And then I found another sound, and then I had to go and train. The martial arts training was going. And I came back and I stuck my headphones on. And I go, oh, I wonder if this sounds great. And I went, oh, God, what was that? What were you thinking?
Oh, goodness.
And then you kind of go, yeah. And I sort of went to bed feeling, oh, God, I'll never get this music writing thing sorted. But isn't that always the way? You know, I remember when I took my first drove a car, I nearly took out my father's greenhouse out because I kangarooed the car and it lurched forward and we were a bit close to the building. And I got out of the car and said, that's it. I'm never going to drive again. I'm so upset. It feels horrible.
Yes.
And you know, I've driven in many countries. So I think for me, the creativity piece isn't that you can create. It's overcoming the story that you can't, and to the point where you accept that, and this, you start to see how grace starts to come together as a framework. You can accept that your first attempts aren't going to be great, and that's okay. And if you're grounded enough, then you're going to stick at it. If you're not grounded, you're going to give up, or you're going to do something else. So you see how you're grounding. The resolve is so R is for resolve, and that's the I'm going to keep going because I want to for me. So I want to learn to write music. I want music out there that I feel good about, that I know is orchestral and it's got my own voice to it, and all that sort of stuff. So I have the resolve. I've accepted that I don't know how to do it now and it's going to be uncomfortable. I'm creating something that's brand new. And I'm doing the bit I'm missing is the embody bit, which is I need to do this as a regular practice. So my practice is not consistent enough to make the progress I need to do. So that's the bit I need to work on. Right. So there's a simple example of how the Grace framework almost acts as a compass to say, you can use that framework to go, so where are you? Which part of it is missing? Is it one part, all parts? What?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that. So let's talk about your Grace framework.
Sure.
Is it an acronym for?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go through that because I'd love to hear more.
So G is for grounding. So okay. Grounding is all about coming back into your body. Grounding is all about I am coherent. When I think about my mind, body, and my spirit and my values, I am in a place where all of that's aligned and I have what's called coherence. So you can measure coherence by putting a sensor on your finger or on your ear that measures your heart rate variance. And when you're in coherence, you get a very smooth pattern of waves. When you're out of coherence, it's very, you know, you can't ground that. So you're not grounded. But grounding includes other things. You know that you're in your parasympathetic nervous system. So your breathing tends to be lower down. You're not sweating. You're not got a dry mouth. Your eyes are relaxed. Your weight tends to be lower. There's all sorts of ways, you know, the way your blood's flowing, you can see that. You can see the rate of the pulse of the carotid artery. You know, you can see how that's doing. Is that resting or is it racing? So that tends to be what grounding is about. It's bringing you back to that integrated sense of coherence. Resolve attempts to get around the issue of goal setting. People think goal setting, oh, well, it's just smart goals. And you go, yeah. The problem with that is we hang on to goals too tightly. We go,
Yes.
I am going to have a goal and I will achieve it by this time. You know, it's measurable, it's achievable, it's realistic, and it's time bound. And you go, yeah. And then something happens. And
Right.
you go, so I'm due to take my second degree black belt test. I was due to take it in November and I failed my mock exam. I wasn't ready. I was pretty reason I was reasonably certain I wasn't going to pass. And that kind of became a self-fulfilling story. I wasn't. And the honest truth was, I wasn't ready. So now I'll do it in March. But the resolve is I'm still going to do that test. I still want to become the person that is worthy of wearing that piece of clothing around my waist. So I have resolve that keeps me going. I still have a goal, but I'm holding it lightly because it, again, it might not happen in March. Okay, I'll do it in summer. But I'm
That's
still going to
great.
do it.
Yes, and it's good to have goals, but if we sometimes we're so determined to achieve the goal, we could set ourselves up for goal fatigue or failure and give up. But what I hear you saying, it's the resolve
Yeah, well,
that keeps you in the game.
think about the person that says, I'm going to be a chief executive. And they work really, really hard and they do all sorts of all the right things. And then, you know, from let's say it's their 40th birthday and they've got the keys to the corner office and they walk through the door, I've got the keys, and they kind of go,
Now what?
now what? This doesn't feel like I expected it to. And they're sat on the end of a bed in a hotel looking at a wall going, is this it? Because if it is, it's not what I expect it to be. And you'll hear sports people, you know, sports people that win gold medals, that win the World Cup in certain sports, and they'll say, I can't believe that I was so miserable the day after we won. And the reason is their identity was tied in winning. It wasn't tied up in being a person, being their own person. And that's the challenge is we get so wrapped up in it, we get to a place where you go, I am my job. You go, no, you're not. And that's why you feel rubbish. That's why you feel this incongruence. You know, you've done the thing, but there's something inside you that, as you said, that trigger for transition that people suddenly experience. You go, but hang on, I did everything right. I put my ladder against the tree. I climbed it. I worked really hard. I cut all the foliage away so I could get to the top of the jungle. And you got to the top of the jungle, and guess what? You looked out, and for you, that wasn't the right jungle anymore. It was at one point, but because you hung on to the goal so tightly, you didn't leave room for enough room for friends, families, hobbies, and exploring other things. You know, things that you were told. Oh, don't do that. You know, that's nonsense. You know, why are you doing that? It always reminds me of the joke where a young Indian lady says to her father, Dad, I want to go to university, but I'm going to be an actor. And her dad says, that's fine, as long as you spell actor DOCTOR.
That's good.
So, you know, you've been conditioned in certain ways. Only look over here, don't look over here. And all I do is try to encourage people to consider and embrace wholeheartedly what speaks to them, not what they were told should speak to them.
Absolutely. Because we have to listen internally to who we are as well.
And a lot of the time we don't listen. You know,
We don't.
we put
We
that to one
don't.
side. We kind of go, yeah, and then something will happen. And the body will tell you need to listen. You know, have you ever had that experience where you've been working really hard and then you go for a vacation, then you spend the first 3 days asleep and with a cold. And that's kind of your body going, well, pay attention now. But sometimes
Yes.
it gets really serious And you know, people are working away, and they'll be taken. You know, they go for a medical check, and all of a sudden, the body is telling them something that they really don't. You know, it becomes, in some cases, life-threatening. You know, you've contracted a particular illness. You've got a particular thing that's emerged, and some of that is down to the fact that you haven't listened enough to when your body has been grumbling at you to go, give me a rest. I need a rest. I need you to pay attention.
Oh, and I have learned to do that, Paul. I have can sense when I can feel the fatigue, the possibility of a cold, and then I just say, stop, rest. Do something sitting down, just rest, because none of us can afford to get sick because we have things to do. But and that's what I love about your framework. You really help people do all that they're called to do without the burnout.
That's the aim, is you can do it. And we're told, you know, we believe this story of hustle, hustle, hustle all the time. You never see an elite athlete, hustle all the time, because rest is an active process. In fact, rest and sleep, an elite athlete will tell you, are some of the most important parts of their training. And yet we will run round and we will go, no, we need to hustle. If we're not hustling, we're not creating worth, we're not valuable. And that is so misguided. We need that rest. And you know, if you think about business and versus professional sports, we love professional sports people. We like them winning. We like all this stuff. But the thing is, the professional sports people do the embody part of race every day. It's kind of like I go train, 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 compete. Train, 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 compete. Whereas in business, it goes, well, I'm going to compete, 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 compete. Tell you what, should we go and do some training? Yeah, okay, let's go training. And then we come back and we go compete, 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 hustle, hustle, compete, compete, and we, you know, we don't do that train thing all the time, and therefore we don't get better, or we do by accident rather than by design.
Oh, that's a great analogy there between both worlds, both worlds. So take us through, continue with grace. What is the A, C, and E?
So A is about acceptance, and there's three levels of acceptance. There's acceptance of self. So do I accept who I am? Do I listen to my voice? Do I listen to the values that I've pushed to one side and go, no, these things are important. These are the things, these are the values. And values aren't words, they're behaviors that bring us joy. You know, do I do the things that bring me joy, or do I do the things that are other people's expectations? Acceptance of other is not a willingness just to accept any behavior, or it's a willingness to confront the reality of what's in front of you, and then
Yeah,
to make a
good.
conscious and then to make a conscious decision, even if that conscious decision is to detach with love. Yeah, I don't accept. I accept you. I don't accept the behavior, and I don't want to be around it. And we can do that explicitly, or we can do it implicitly. But that's really important, because I firmly believe that setting boundaries, some
Yes.
people might say, oh, that's really selfish and you need a more worldly perspective. And I understand where that comes from. Yes, you do. But if you're doing that at the expense of your health and your well-being and things that matter to you most, then you're not really helping anyone. You're not accepting yourself. You're not accepting who you really are, which is, I'm someone who needs this particular boundary, and it's important.
Yes.
And particularly in a work situation, you know, you'll get situations where people say, right, we need to do, you know, proposal due on Monday, we need to work the weekend. And because of peer pressure and because of shame, people will go, yeah, okay. And the voice is saying yes, but the body's going, what? What
Yeah.
are you saying? And then standing up for yourself and being brave and going, I'm sorry, I've got family commitments, and this time is my time, and it's long booked, and I will help you any way I can on Friday evening. I'll work late, and I'll be at work on Monday early to support your work. But Friday and Saturday, I'm sorry, I'm committed. And that's exceptionally hard to do. So
Yes.
this is where grace actually, everyone goes, oh, grace is a bit woo-woo and a bit fluffy and a bit soft. And you kind of go, actually, it's not. So acceptance of other is about having compassion for someone else and then making a conscious decision about how you're going to react.
Yes, acceptance is what it says. I
Yeah,
accept the
it
person for who they are and how they're created and how they move through life. and look at the fruit. I always look at the fruit of a person, and I see good, I celebrate that.
Yeah, you know, and it's not easy. I remember the musician Tim Minchin, and he said it's really easy to be kind to people who are like us. We can hold our arms open wide and be kind to people that think like us, behave by us, are similar to us in many ways. He said the real test is how long and how wide can you hold your arms for people who are completely different to you and go against a lot of what you stand for.
To me, that is
Then,
one of the signs of a great leader, the one who can embrace the one who is difficult, the
yeah.
one who can look at that person and still see a potential, still see a possibility of pulling that person out into their greatness, regardless of their personality and stresses maybe that they bring. To me, a good leader will embrace those that are difficult and help reshape them, help reframe them if they are willing. But the leader has to try.
Yes, I agree. And that's a two-way street as well, because most change does not happen in the mainstream. Most change happens at the margins. And we
Yes.
go to the margins to allow us to be changed. Because when we allow us to be changed, we grow. And when we grow, we can help other people grow. But if we stay in the middle of the mainstream and what's safe and what's comfortable and we're not being judged and are we really growing? So you have to go to places that where that happens, where people do challenge your views, where people do reshape your thinking and reframe that. Because until that happens, really you're just recycling stuff that goes through. That's why I like the martial arts practice, because you're constantly learning and being shown and things are being revealed to you. And you kind of go, oh, wow. You know, I now need to practice this. I didn't know that was something I needed to practice. Okay, I need to practice and grow. And that happens all the time. So that's acceptance. And then there's acceptance of systems. So there's three levels: acceptance of self, acceptance of other, and acceptance of system. And what that says is I need to face the reality of the system that I'm in.
Right. That
because
makes sense.
We are all in a system. And most of the problems people experience are because they think the system should be different, but they can't actually influence it beyond their immediate selves. Because if you change yourself, you change those around you. So if we don't accept the system, then we're already fighting. You know, we're expending energy that doesn't, and we need to save that to be creative.
Absolutely, because if we're in a system, we're there and we're supposed to accept the system and learn how to thrive in that system for the benefit of others. But if all of our energy is about trying to take that system down, trying to change it to where we think it should be, then we're really in the wrong place. And, you know, when you were talking about acceptance, and I don't know why, but this story came up in my own life when you were talking about accepting others. And one of the things that I believe in my coaching as well, I always believe there's a root and a reason behind the way we act, behave, and feel. And sometimes we don't take the time to understand the other person, to understand where they're coming from. Why are they acting that way? Why do they behave that way? And sometimes just having the intention to have a conversation, to ask questions, you discover something about that person. So my story, and it's real quick, years ago, playing tennis and loved playing tennis. And I had a partner that no one else wanted to play with. She was really great at tennis, but her personality was very sharp, very cold, very indifferent, very robotic like on the courts, and a lot of people would not play with her as a result. I did, because I just thought there's got to be something going on here. And so the more I played with her, I finally got to the point and I understood behind all of that was the pain of someone who longed to have a child and struggled getting pregnant. And so she showed up cold, indifferent, protected. And once I understood that, I saw her so differently. And I could tolerate who she was because I knew it was coming from a place of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I just felt like I needed to share that because I think a lot of people
No.
can relate to difficult people, but there's a story behind that.
Well, whenever you see a behavior, the question is not why the behavior, but what's the unmet need here?
Yes.
Because that will often take you there. The other thing to think about is we often meet people and we often meet people with the intention to, oh, I'm going to analyze you and I'm going to ask you smart questions. And I once did an exercise. I sat on a webinar for a couple of hours, and the first part of the webinar was just to meet someone in a breakout room, not say anything, and look at each other. And then after 5 minutes of silence and just looking at each other, just ask the question, so what wants to emerge here now? What are we noticing? And he's go, wow. And I thought, having gone through that process, if we could only apply that and nothing else, I thought, well, there's one of the keys to world peace, just meeting people to in silence for who they are. Let them come to you, not us go to them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, tell us about the CNE.
So C is about create,
Okay.
and by that I mean create in all its guises, but I prefer it to be sort of courageous creativity. What is the thing that, if you t it's the classic coaching thing, isn't it? You get it. You say, if you had a blank piece of paper and a pen and you couldn't fail and money was no object, what would you write down as the thing you wanted to do? And usually someone will write something. A client of mine did it and they said, I want to be in musical theatre. I said, great, that's what we're going to do. We're going to figure out how to get you closer to musical theatre. And it's that courage to speak a truth of what's really calling to you. It's the silent voice that keeps sort of nudging you, and it keeps going round. The music thing has always been with me, and if it keeps coming around and coming back to you, that there's a theme that you need to pay attention to. So it's the creativity to come out of that shell and say, I'm actually going to step into something creative. And it doesn't have to be music or art. It can be a bodily practice. It can be, meditation can be creative. It's solving a problem. Maybe you've got an answer to a problem that nobody else has seen, and you kind of go, no, I know how to solve this. And
Yes.
kind of go, okay, go for it. Just show us how to do that, and build, put bring people around you that will support you in trying to solve that.
I always
It
say,
doesn't
don't be
matter.
afraid. Yeah, don't be afraid of the thoughts that you get. I believe they're divinely given to us for a purpose to solve a problem, like just something simple like that. Okay, what is the E?
So E is all about embodying it, which really is about
Okay.
consistent practice. So if you think about how a sword is forged, a sword is forged in fire and through beating metal. So it's quite a, it's a friction, it's a process of friction. And it's only by processes of friction that we develop and grow and we polish and we become sharper. And therefore you need that embodied practice, that daily regular practice to keep sharpening the saw, as Stephen Covey would say, but to bring it into the body so that you can do it without thinking. If you
I
think
love
about a
that.
piece of music, you think about playing guitar. There's a Hans Zimmer's current guitarist, Guthrie Govan. He was doing a master class, and he said, really, I think embodiment is simply being able to do something before you think you could do it, before thinking about it. So you do it automatically. And that's letting the body, that's trusting the body. The body communicates four times more than the brain to the brain than the brain communicates to the body, sorry, the heart. And therefore, if that those kind of processes are going on, we need to learn to trust the body and its own intelligence to support us in doing activity. If it's what Tim Galway talks about, system one and system two. System one is our brain and our prefrontal cortex thinking and keeping us safe and trying to think its way through. When we switch that off, a different intelligence comes and we get into flow, and accessing that flow state is really what embodiment is all about. That practice is building to a flow. If you look at you look at elite sprinters, you look at dancers, gymnasts, those that Simone Biles, you look at her and she is just flowing. But the process of getting to that stage of flow is guts, grind, practice, falling over, bumps, all kinds of things that, you know, it's that going to be great first time you do it. But if you keep working at it, you'll get there.
It takes time, doesn't it?
So that's embody.
It takes time and perseverance.
It does. And we live in a world where people want a magic bullet, or they want,
yes,
some, you know, they want a tick box that says I've done this, so I must be. When I was at IBM, we used to teach emotional intelligence, and we do like this thing, like a front of the class teaching, and we have flip charts, and we go this, 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 and this, and we show some videos that go this, 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 and illustrating emotional intelligence. Then we'd send people away into groups, into little breakout groups to go and practice doing emotional intelligence. And then we come back and we sit down and we go, any questions? And then someone would go, is it lunchtime yet? And then the assumption was that if they'd been through that process, then they knew emotional intelligence. And emotional intelligence is a lifelong learning journey.
It is.
With all sorts of nuances. So I find that funny. And most things have a mastery to them, you know, that you never reach, but you keep that. If you embody, in my way of thinking, then you get closer to it, you get better at it.
Can you share with us, Paul, you work with so many leaders, can you think of a particular leader or organization or team that you've worked with that had some transformation as a result of your practice here with Grace?
So one of the tools I use is Leadership Circles Collective Leadership Assessment. And what that does is it gives you a litmus test on how people show up together as a team leading and how they want to show up. And what was interesting, I was quite nervous when I got the results back, because everybody wanted to show up in this sort of creative state, you know, the creative competencies. And that was the culture they wanted, but the culture they had was the exact opposite.
Oh,
and
goodness.
I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this? But, you know, bit by bit, step by step, we started to see that there's still stuff in the bottom half of the circle, but the improvements are significant in that we're starting to see people grow into graded competencies. They still have a long way to go. This journey of change, particularly with teams. You know, teams are difficult because they've got so many moving parts, because they've got messy humans on them that have all got diverse backgrounds and conditioning and baggage and aspirations and hopes. And that, you know, technology is a lot easier than teams, I promise you. But if you're willing to be brave and be the eye of the storm and apply the principles of grace, you can coach individuals and then coach individuals to teams. So you can show teams. One of the things I do is I teach them to see their own behaviors and have a visceral experience of what that's like. So I do a simple game called Red Black Game, and we divided the team into four. It was great. And basically the game is this: you've got playing cards, and all you have to do is pick either a red card or a black card, and each team has a countdown, and based on whether they show a red or a black card, they score, and it's prisoner's dilemma. That's all it is. And the way to win the game is for everybody to realize that if we all show black, we'll all win, because that's the maximum points. And what was hilarious was that the chief executive was in the room, and once I explained the rules and I said, right, everybody good, should we have a practice round? And everyone went, yeah. And I read, okay. And the chief executive spoke up and he said, why don't we all play back? Everyone ignored him.
Oh, goodness.
Because when he said that, I went, oh God, this exercise is going to be over really quickly. But I didn't stop him. I let him go with it. I let the team go with it. And of course the game played out where teams were, because the object of the exercise is to score the maximum number of points for the team.
Right.
The twist is, who's the team? And the team is all of them, obviously.
Right.
And consequently, one of the teams won and everybody else lost. And that was the question. Why didn't you listen to your chief executive? He had the answer. And then people said, well, yeah, we did hear him, but, you know, we wanted to do our own thing. And we just did.
It revealed a lot.
but if you think, yeah, and I said, that was the lesson. I said, so how does this play into everything else you do? Because you do that everywhere else in the business. A, I've seen it, and B, you know it. And people were sort of sheepishly looking at the floor, and it's like, so how do we change this? And then you get a conversation about how we change it. So we've got a silly little game that is an embodied game that, takes people to a place where they have a visceral experience of, oh, yeah, we do that, don't we?
They take ownership, which is great.
Well, they do for the workshop, and then they go out of the workshop, and then they just revert back to what they were. So that's the tricky. So that's where we're moving to now, is we're doing the piece of work that says, okay, we can't just do workshops every couple of months. We actually need to do a team embodied practice, and we need to figure out how to do that.
Paul, I've loved everything that you've shared. It's incredible that, I could see how your grace framework really can establish a leader, stretch them, develop them, and ultimately have the impact upon their team. Just the grounding, the resolve, the acceptance, the creative part, and embodying everything to have a full effect upon a leadership personnel. I love that what you've shared with us today. So in closing, is there something that you would like to speak to the audience, speak to a leader maybe right now who's maybe thinking they have it all together, but maybe finally realizing they need to change themselves. What would you like to share?
So for those leaders that do have it all together and they're very happy where they are, my words of wisdom are great. Keep doing that. If that fills you up and that fills you with joy and gives you what you want in life, go for that. If you're in that place where things are starting to feel out of alignment, let's call it that, then I would be willing to find a way to have a conversation with someone you trust, someone who isn't necessarily your immediate partner, because that's usually a loaded conversation. If you're the main breadwinner, for example, and you're saying, honey, I want to go into musical theatre, but I'm chief executive of Walt Disney. It's kind of like that's a bit of a pay cut. You have to plan that carefully. I would talk to someone. I would find people to talk to that you trust, that won't say just yes to you, but will help you explore what the unmet need is. The thing you need to let into your life is that still voice that's whispering at you that you keep hearing and you're not paying attention to, because you don't want to end up in your 60s and 70s, not having done the thing that you really wanted to do with your life. And I think that's really, really sad. And there are lots of people that do that. Life is a very short journey. The older you get, the more and more you realize that, which is kind of why we turn away from, hustle, 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 growth, 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 success. It's find what success means to you now. Because what it means to you now won't be what it meant to you when you first left college. It's different things. It's simpler things. We push so hard to try and live extraordinary lives, and we miss the extraordinary that's in the ordinary.
That is so beautiful, Paul. And literally, what you just shared is the heartbeat of transition in the different seasons of our life. What was critical, what was a priority when we were younger, it does change as we season in life. And it's so critical to look at where we presently are and
I agree.
allow what is inside of us to come forth to lead that life of significance. And ultimately, leave a legacy.
Or not.
Or not. And that's a choice, yes. But we want to choose the higher. And I know Paul mentioned unmet needs, that all of us have them.
Yeah,
None of
we
us are
do.
exempt from having, an unmet need in our life. None of us had all of our needs met in life. And don't ignore that emotion that's trying to let you know something's off, something's missing. and stop trying to fulfill that unmet need with things that don't serve you, that things that wind up harming you or taking you down the wrong path.
Oh, yeah.
Take the time to meet with someone like Paul or other people who can help you discover those things to help you develop your leadership, because your potential is unlimited. And don't put a lid upon yourself. Allow yourself to discover more. Allow yourself to face the uncomfortable. Become comfortable being uncomfortable, because you will feel so fulfilled knowing that you are accomplishing more than you ever hoped or dreamed of, because there's so much more inside of you. So don't set a limit. Live a limitless life and discover how even this grace framework can encourage you to go higher so you can impart more and be more impactful and ultimately be a person of influence that's making a difference in other people's lives. And so I want to just thank you all, my Transition Tribe, for being here with me today. And I hope you take away from this conversation that leadership is really not a destination. It is a practice, it's a daily choice, and it's something that we step into with intention, because our growth isn't just about us, but it's about all of the people that are looking to us for guidance. And so as we move forward, I just want each and every day for you to listen to what is going on inside of you. Transition calls us forth. If you are experiencing what Paul mentioned in the beginning, just that angst of where you are, that's transition saying to you, that frustration is trying to speak to you to let you know, step forth. There's more for you to create. There's more for you to step into. Transitions are all about growth. They're all about change. So don't be afraid of the change that's calling you or presenting itself, because you're going to discover more about yourself through the purpose and the power of life's transitions.
Thank you for joining us today on the Transition Bridge podcast. We appreciate you. If you enjoyed listening today, please go ahead and subscribe or review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check out the show notes. And for more information about Debbie, go to DebbieRonca.com. That's DebbieRonca.com.